In this, our contribution to the 2013 Pod Crawl, we discuss Attack of the Clones. And remember, you only have until December 1st to get those He's the House Cat music video contest entries in. So get to it. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Stuart.
And everyone, welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Elliot Kalin. Stuart's last name is Wellington, by the way.
Like the beef that bears his name.
That and he not Stuart Penkin, of character
not
actor.
The news. Not you may remember. Not carrot, necessarily, the news.
Not Stuart Panko, which is the breading you find on a lot of Asian food.
If you're going to make Stuart tempura, you want some Stuart Panko.
Yep.
I don't get it.
Oh, boy.
This is neither an early days of HBO podcast, nor is it a cooking podcast.
What is it, Dan?
Bad movies podcast.
Where we...
Watch a bad movie.
Okay.
And then talk about it.
Yep.
Step one, watch a bad movie.
We already watched a bad movie.
Step two, talk about it.
Now, Dan, I believe this is a special episode. How so? Mm-hmm. It's a crossover, if you will.
Well, this is the episode
where... This is where we threw off the chains of Dan's oppression of making us watch recently released bad movies.
This is a very special episode where we deal with your addiction to angel dust.
I don't have a problem. You have a problem. I can stop whenever I want. Don't mind if I do.
All right. Well, I guess... He doesn't have a problem, guys.
It you know how they out. Get it. It's technically the dandruff from angels' heads.
Elliot turned to angel dust when he was auditioning for that role as a Micro Machines pitchman.
Yeah. It's the only thing that can keep me talking fast enough, but it wasn't fast enough. Should have taken devil dust. You excuse me, I have to go wig out and jump out a window, a la Helen Hunt.
You sounded like a behind-the-music narrator. It was the only thing that could keep him talking fast enough, but it wasn't fast enough.
Unfortunately, it wasn't fast enough. He was running as fast as he could, but life runs a little faster. It soon caught up with him. And he was caught in a net of his own devising. A net he tied in his work as a fisherman.
Okay.
Flash forward. He had hit rock bottom, literally falling to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. You would say, isn't there a river down there? Yes, but it was dry that year.
This is a so very years special later episode.
Sticks and stones might break his bones, and they did, as the members of Sticks and the cast of the TV show Bones attacked him. Oh, it's stones that hurt, not bones.
Yeah, the Rolling Stones.
As the members of Sticks and the Rolling Stones broke his pictures of the members of Bones.
Sticks and Bones. Think about it.
Okay, let's go back in time and change the saying
Think
to Sticks
of the
and Bones.
Black posters you could get with that saying on them.
So what's special about this episode, Dan?
This is part of a brand new thing, unless someone else invented it. But it's a pod
still
crawl,
pretty new, I guess.
Wherein we're doing this in concert with two other bad movie podcasts. Number one, Read It and Weep, and number three, Proudly Resents. And we are number two in the lineup.
And what is a pod crawl? Explain it.
Pod crawl, the idea was we would take a linked series of movies, and during a month, in this case, the month of November, the month we are in now, watch those movies and release them in order. And so last week, Read It and Weep watched episode one
of
the Star Wars films.
Yeah, they watch episode one of The Wire.
The Phantom Menace.
Oh, The Phantom Menace.
And we watched tonight.
Which means no menace, right? Just a phantom.
Attack of the Clowns. And
Star Wars episode two, Send in the Clones.
Proudly Resents.
This is your A plus material.
Star
right?
Wars yeah. Episode
Magazine
two.
Wants their money back.
Everybody wants a. Everybody likes a clone. So why don't you?
Proudly Resents. In a week or so, we'll do Revenge of the Sith.
We're all watching these shitty
Star Wars
prequels.
Episode
right?
three, Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah. So
Nerds in Paradise.
All right, we got it.
That was the second one, right?
I think it was like the 50th one.
Real quick.
Maybe it was the second one. Which one was Nerds in Love?
Wait, they're all in love in all of them, right?
No, but there's one called
It's a Nerds movie about love.
Okay.
So and about tricking someone into love by wearing a Darth Vader helmet.
Hey, Darth Vader, he's a character who came out of the movie we just watched.
Yeah.
And what movie was that, Dan?
It was Revenge of the Clowns.
It was
Attack of the Clones.
Stonewalks episode Dewey. Revenge of the Clowns.
We watched Captain EO tonight in 3D.
We watched Robert Zadar Wars.
Robert, it's the story of a race of people with huge faces who are fighting.
They have chin fights.
And at the end, they
go. Love the practical effects.
They yell, Tango! Stuart, there were no effects. That was his face.
The ultimate special effect. So, Dan.
Because Robert Zadar's face is the ultimate special effect.
Off the top,
FX 2.
The art of Robert Zadar's face.
I just want to acknowledge something before we get too deep into this.
Okay. Before we get episode 2, Attack of the Clones deep.
We were a little concerned that the Star Wars bone has been cleaned of comedy,
then
cracked open,
yep,
sucked of its marrow, and discarded
and the
in,
bone,
the, in, a tra- in the compactor from the first Star Wars.
The bone itself was ground up to make Star Wars bread,
yeah,
for a star giant.
But I don't know. I mean, Stuart, we actually watched your DVD copy of Attack of the Clones.
Okay.
I'm going to out you.
Is this, yeah, is
well, that's one of those things that normally I'd think people would be like, Stuart owns that? That's nerdy. But I know that when Stuart reveals he does something ultra nerdy, everyone's like,
that's so sexy.
That's so sexy that he yeah. plays role-playing games.
Total sploosh.
That's mm-hmm. so sexy that he reads 70s sci-fi novels. Mm-hmm. All these things that would be nerdy if Elliot did it. If yeah. Stuart does it, it's totally sexified.
Warcraft novels. He's the sexiest man on the street.
Well, they're Warhammer novels.
Yeah, it's not fucking Warcraft novels. Whatever. Dude. Get the fuck out of here.
Come on.
Warcraft, Warhammer.
They're yeah, very different.
Yeah, completely different.
You, Dan, don't embarrass
completely
us.
Completely different IPs.
IPs.
So, but then,
as a lawyer would say.
Where I was getting to with this, though, was like, Stuart may have seen this movie multiple times. I believe Elliot and I... We haven't seen this since the theater.
I think the theater was the first time I saw this, and it's sad that I remember.
I think I saw it twice in the theater.
Yeah,
but I'm a big nerd.
I remember, except that's apparent. The women are like, "Oh, he saw Star Wars Episode II twice." Oh.
Yeah, I totally hang out with girls and stuff.
Take me away.
That doesn't mean I'm not a nerd.
Anyway,
but the point is, we're coming to this relatively fresh.
Well, what's weird is that there's so many movies I've liked more that I remember less well than this one, which I don't like. And yeah. I saw it once, and watching it again, I was like, oh, yeah, this scene. Oh, yeah, this scene. Like, I remembered it so well. And I don't know why it, for such a fairly generic movie, imposed itself onto my memory so strongly.
You know, Star Wars imprinted upon you at a young age, and
that's true.
That meant that anything bearing that name seemed important to you, no matter how bad it was.
Imprinted on Star Wars when I hatched. The first thing I saw was Star Wars, and so I thought I was a Star Wars. And I followed it around. I thought it was my mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I imprinted on it.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, but you're right. Like, so growing up, Star Wars, speaking for myself, can't speak for you guys,
mm-hmm.
was hugely important. I spent a lot of time reading, like, the ancillary novels and guides to the various characters and ships and planets.
That's interesting.
Playing your Dark Forces on PC and things like that.
Yeah, sure.
Shadows of the Empire
Kyle
for the
Katarn
N64.
Kyle Katarn's in the Dark Forces game, right?
Yeah.
Like, see,
there's
I
a
went,
Jedi named Kyle.
I went so the other way.
The first movie is named Luke. Come on.
Yeah, Skywalker, dude. That's a cool guy.
I gotta say, like, I went the other way in my love of Star Wars, which is I loved the Star Wars movies, but I loved them. And because I loved them, I viewed other Star Wars stuff as non-canonical. I don't want to waste my time with that.
I mean, that seems super nerdy.
I did love to get the toys and play with them.
See, I never played with the toys. I loved the movies as a kid, and I read the books when I was in, like, late elementary and middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like I wanted to learn everything about this universe, and I think I wasn't...
And it's coming very handy in later life.
It kind of has in my day job.
Yeah, that's
what I tell my wife all the time. She says, when we have kids, they're not going to watch TV all the time. And I say, look, if I didn't watch TV all the time as a kid, I wouldn't be able to do my job today.
They're going
to
watch, like, fucking space holograms and shit.
I don't think so. I mean, my kids are going to grow up in the next couple of years, probably. It's not going to be like the year 2057, you know.
With their robo-nannies.
In their moon playhouses. Anyway, but Star Wars was a big thing, and I learned about every little bit of it, and I think I started to ease off of it before the prequels came out. So, but when the prequels came out, there was still that rush of like a new Star Wars thing. Like, I know the old ones so well. Like, just hearing the music gets me to like shudder in an excited way. You know, yeah. Brings back those memories. Mm-hmm. And then the prequels were like,
stimulate your prostate.
Yep. And then the prequels came out, and it was like, well, you know what? This was a fun thing when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, I slowed off childish things for a little bit.
And you know what? This is an argument that actually my brother has made to me that, like, he's like, you know what? The originals were silly. They weren't as good as you think. Like,
well, I disagree with that.
Yeah, well, no, like, I do too. But, like, he's like, he wasn't defending the prequels per se, but he was like, I think he was saying that people were unduly hard on the prequels because they were unduly soft on the original movies. But the original movies were silly. I agree with that. But silly in such a smarter way.
But silly in the way of, like, this is a fun adventure. Yeah. Whereas you watch the prequels and you're like, this is a boring, like, exposition-filled slog. And yeah. The characters are really lame.
There's a lot of people sitting around conference tables talking about
things. So many
things.
Scenes of people sitting around talking about stuff.
You could say the original trilogy had some kind of, like, a pulp sensibility to
it. But also,
which,
like,
this doesn't.
In Star Wars, there's a scene where they're sitting around a table talking in the Millennium Falcon. They're sitting around the table talking while they play three-dimensional monster chess, mm-hmm. which is great. In the movies and here, they're just sitting around normal tables. Like,
yeah, where's the monster chess, guys?
But where's, like, a visual thing to get your attention or a detail of the world they live in that makes it exciting?
And
you
instead,
know?
They're like, yeah, there's been all these crazy battles and planets are...
planets are defecting.
Oh,
and we
wish
have
we could show
them.
It to you, but we can't.
We can't, so I'll just say it right now. But should we go over the plot of this movie?
Yeah,
should we bother?
So you haven't seen it that many times, and you claim to remember what happens.
Well, I mean, we also just watched it.
Oh, yeah.
I had a hard time. I gotta say, I had a hard time following
I've seen it a couple
it.
Times, and I still don't.
It's a hard... Well, because the character motivations don't make sense, and the plot is needlessly complicated. But let's see if we can figure it out, okay? Together.
It's kind of a mystery, right?
So, mm-hmm. at the end of the last movie...
It's a riddle wrapped in an enigma.
Wrapped in a special effect that doesn't look very
CGI.
Good. And the special effects have aged. They didn't look
surfing
great at the time.
The
They've aged
fat,
very
fat
poorly.
Yeah, now it looks all the more like a cutscene from
so
a video game.
We'll start, okay, at the end of the last movie, Anakin Skywalker was a little kid. Mm-hmm. They had defeated the Trade Federation, mm-hmm. which had blockaded the planet Naboo for God
now
knows
that's
what
the
reason.
Race of Asian aliens, right?
The aliens that are Asian stereotypes.
Okay.
As opposed
that are
to
also
the,
techno-fetishists
as opposed,
robots.
Yeah, they have a weird... Yeah, and a lot of them, some of them lock themselves in their room starting at teenage, and then they live that way forever, forcing their parents to leave food outside the door. Well, they live more in the virtual world than in the real one.
Sure, they're real runners.
Okay. So anyway.
Console cowboys.
So it's they're the Asian aliens as opposed to the Gungans, which are the offensive black aliens.
Okay.
Now it's 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
We find that Queen Amidala, who has not aged a day,
no, amazing.
She is almost assassinated
flawless.
In an attempt that kills one of her body doubles. It's decided.
But not her other body double, who I was surprised to learn was played by Rose Byrne.
I think she's just an assistant, not a body double. She doesn't look like her.
I mean,
but that's something
like,
that was set up in the first one, right?
That she has
don't
body
look that
doubles.
Much
she has like a legion of body doubles.
She has, much like Saddam Hussein, mm-hmm. whom Natalie Portman, you know, resembles in many ways. She has a legion of body doubles who take her, who act as decoys.
Well, that was one of the funniest things I thought at the beginning of the movie, was when the body double gets blown up. As she's dying, she talks to Queen Amidala, and she says, I'm sorry, I failed you. And I'm like, no, you did exactly what you're supposed to do. Get blown up instead of the Queen Amidala.
Yeah.
I mean,
hey,
come on.
Let's do it. Yeah, get the gold medal.
Yeah.
Give her the medal that Chewbacca didn't get at the end of Star Wars.
Yeah, you think at the end she should have been like, yes, I feel like I've done my job, mm-hmm. or something like
and
that.
And then faded away into a ghost.
That was awesome.
Like the light from heaven shines down.
Yeah, she turns into an Obi-Wan
from
ghost.
Space heaven.
Yeah, the particles like get sucked into a weird bracelet that Amidala has.
Yeah, no, she gains the power of her devils.
Yeah, of course.
So anyway, it's decided she needs more protection. Well, who better to protect her than Anakin Skywalker, the little boy she discovered, I guess? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now and a hot dog Padawan.
Now a Padawan to his master, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Now, here's the thing. A big problem is that it's 10 years later, Anakin Skywalker has gone from a child to a young adult.
Puberty, man.
And Amidala has not changed at all, and he has a big crush on her. He's been thinking about her every day for 10 years. So much
like
so.
Like you do when you fall in love with someone at age 10. and you just keep thinking about them, even if you haven't seen them for years and years and years.
Now, here, the age problem is a real issue here, because in the first movie, Anakin is like 9, and Amidala is clearly like 20-something.
Yeah.
But for this movie to work out, you have to pretend that Anakin was like 11, and Amidala was like 15 or 16.
Yeah.
And so now he's like 21, and she's like 25, 26. Then it's a little okay. Otherwise, it's just the age difference is just much bigger, you know? Mm-hmm. And hey, what's to say that a guy in his 20s couldn't be into a girl in her 30s, you know, or yeah, late 30s?
What
come on.
Panthers,
let's
Tudors.
Just make this like a Sam Keith comic where there's a younger guy and an older woman.
Yeah.
Come on.
Sure.
I mean, it's not like that's your point of reference to that.
Is that the most obscure reference I've made?
It's not like that.
Or was it my Codex Serafinianus reference from last episode?
It's certainly like that doesn't it's not like that doesn't happen. It usually doesn't happen when the lady knew the person when they were a kid. Like
hey,
the guy was a kid.
If pornography has taught me anything, it happens all the time.
Okay. But it usually happens with a
sponge bath.
But it usually happens with a clearly 40-year-old guy who has his baseball cap on backwards, which is what indicates
that
he's
a teen. That he's like a guy that's 19 years old or something. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
popping chewing gum.
Yeah,
not wearing underpants for some reason.
It's not the kids aren't doing that.
Under
days,
his
Stuart.
Easily removed jogging pants.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they're assigned as her bodyguards or whatever.
Yeah,
and she is attacked by a bounty hunter using some kind of worm robot gun. It's a robot that shoots worms that I guess are going to poison her or something.
Yeah.
Anakin senses it, runs in, and very, like, a little too excitedly slashes the worms off of her with a lightsaber. Yeah. He could have killed her easily. Mm-hmm.
And that robot's like, oh shit, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah. He hauls metal butt out of that place, but not fast enough before Obi-Wan Kenobi can jump on him. But let's, before we get to the chase scene in Coruscant City,
mm-hmm. Sure.
There's, by this point,
a bunch of meetings.
There's already
a ton of meetings.
A
let's
lot
read
of
the
meetings.
Minutes.
There's a lot of.
All right, Yoda says.
Yoda
something
proposed.
In backwards syntax.
Now, it's already been set up that Anakin has a crush on Queen Amidala and that she sees him as a little boy. And there's a scene. Is this before or after she says, don't look at me like that? It makes me uncomfortable.
Like, this was before that.
It's, but right. It's very clear already to the audience that he is creepy.
Yeah, he's a creepy creep.
He doesn't come off as like this lost romantic who's pining for the girl of his dreams if only she would notice him. He comes off
he's
as like
a
stalker.
Stalker.
He's less Lloyd Dobler and more what's his name in Sliver.
And the like as I said, like the only convincing line in the scenes between those two is when she says, "Don't look at me like that. It makes me uncomfortable."
Yeah. But anyway, there's an assassination attempt. Obi-Wan and Anakin chase using their flying speeder car,
mm-hmm.
Chase the bounty hunter, who they catch, but then the
this
bounty
hunter... The first big set piece.
The first big mm-hmm. action set piece where there's a lot of, like, here's the problem. There's a lot of banter, but everything's so lazily performed and done. Like, it's shot as if you're just watching it from a distance most of the time. And Anakin and Obi-Wan are supposed to be in this flying speeder car that is banking at these ridiculous angles and like zooming down towards the ground, and the looks on their faces, they might as well be like in a vibrating chair at a Hammock or Slammer store. Like, they don't look particularly scared. They don't look particularly excited. There's banter where it's like, I hate when he does that, but it's so lazily and so quietly delivered that it's like, was that supposed to be a gag? Like, I don't.
And Hayden Christensen struggles over it. I mean, he's got like marbles in his mouth or something.
Yeah. I believe that, much like I believe it was Cicero, to practice his oratory, he would speak with pebbles in his mouth to lose his stutter. But I think it's more likely...
He forgot to remove the pebbles.
Yes. It's more likely that Hayden Christensen just mumbles a lot. He's like...
Sure.
He thinks he's inventing Marlon Brando's way of acting, and sometimes that works for him.
Can I take a break to talk about Hayden Christensen?
Okay, this is official timeout trademark.
Like, Dan just pulled a Zach Morris, said timeout, pulled out his big phone, and called up Hayden Christensen.
Time has stopped.
It might be premature to discuss this, but part of the reason why the romance is so creepy is that Hayden Christensen, number one, as an actor, just seems like a petulant guy in this movie, rather than like... a passionate guy.
The things that work so well for him in Shattered Glass, where he is a petulant liar who's been caught in this web of fiction he's spun around himself, does not work here when he's supposed to be a tragic hero who loves a woman and then falls from grace because he cares too much. I don't know.
Yeah, but also, like, he looks very strange in this movie. Let's just, like, I mean, I spent...
What, because of his rat tail ponytail?
Well, that's part... Look,
it's the single braid, isn't it?
Number one...
Is it his leather karate gi?
Well, he has both a ponytail and then a thing that's like hanging off the side of his ear like he went to Jamaica.
It's Padawan braid.
Yeah, man.
I got this
done on the beach.
Look, I went to St. Thomas.
Wait, this is very important. Like, put in your ear?
This reminds me of this very nice... day I had.
Me and this little girl were sitting next to each other getting our hair braided. Yeah.
But also, I mean, like, there's something weird about Hayden Christensen's mouth. Far be it from me to, like, harp on someone's, like, physical attributes, but... Like,
unless it's somebody's wife's butt.
In which case,
ba-ba-boom.
You can't shut him up.
But, like, I was wondering through much of the movie, I'm like, is he wearing braces? What's going on? Like, there's something weird about, like, his teeth.
No, totally. I think he's got Invisalign or something.
Yeah, he's got space braces.
Which I think... adds to this like mealy mouth, mumble mouth, marble mouth thing that he's got going on.
Well, blame his astrodontist.
Oh, I hate you so much.
Okay, this is not the right role for him.
Yeah.
He's not cast well in this, and it doesn't help that nobody in this movie is good as acting. Ewan McGregor, who's a good actor, is bad in it. Christopher Lee, who I love, is bad in it. Frank Oz's voice acting is not so good, and I have to blame George Lucas. Samuel Jackson, one of the most charismatic, energetic actors in movies, is like a block of wood in this. And I have to blame George Lucas's inability to interact with actors, basically. Yeah. Like, everyone is brought down a level in this.
Joel Edgerton delivers probably my least favorite line in all of movies when he introduces his girlfriend, Beru.
He's playing the young Uncle Owen. He says, "This is my girlfriend, Beru." And what's great is that in space, they have a different word for child, which is youngling, but girlfriend is still the word they use.
Man.
This is my life mate.
So stupid.
But, or like
he's
Natalie.
Not, I like the guy who plays series about
or like
her,
Natalie Portman, who can act very well in this, acts very poorly. Sure. Like, everyone's a bad actor in this.
Yeah.
It's unfair to judge Hayden Christensen just on this movie alone.
But, no, it is, but I find him a measure of unappealing above
Jake
everyone
Lloyd,
else.
Though, right?
Yeah, it's unfair to blame Jake Lloyd.
And he was the star of the future. He turned out to be a superstar, so
unfortunately,
I guess we're
he
all
went
wrong.
Nova too fast. True Hollywood story, Jake Lloyd. Well, here's the thing. Like, I've seen Hayden Christensen now in two roles that I thought he was really good in. One was Shattered Glass.
Yeah, I agree. He was good.
The other was in a stage production that I mentioned you guys were watching the movie of This Is Our Youth that I saw in London years ago when I was in college. Where he was playing, a very unlikable character. But I'll tell you who really stole the show in that production.
You go to the theater.
Who really stole the show in that production was Jake Gyllenhaal, who was fantastic in it. There's a scene in This Is Our Youth. I don't know if anyone's seen the play, where Jake Gyllenhaal's character knocks over a pile of a plate with drugs on it. And he did it so well that people in the audience thought that he had made a mistake. And you could hear people in the audience go like, oh, like they thought that he had fucked up the prop. But he just did it, like that happens in the play. Like he just did a good job. So Jake Gyllenhaal, This Is Our Youth. If you can go back in time to London in the year 2001, go do it.
Like fucking dig up the corpse of H.G. Wells.
Find somebody's DeLorean just lying around.
Find the map that he left in his coffin.
What, to where he buried his fictional time machine?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're barely into this movie. The point is,
almost done, right?
No, we are like 15 minutes into a 2.5 hour movie. So they basically, they find this bounty hunter who gets killed at the last minute by a dart. Ewan McGregor takes the dart and brings it to his friend Dex, who runs a space diner.
Dex Dog Tech.
Dex, who is basically Mel from Alice diner.
The robot waitress's name is Flo.
And what's so great about this movie in a bad way is that the old movies have like a little bit of a World War II dogfighting tinge, like an old pulp feel. George Lucas took that here to mean like, so I guess this is like the 40s in outer space in the Star Wars galaxy. So it's like everything's Art Deco. There's a space diner. Like things are just very like old fashionedy, but space. It's really, it's not very good. But anyway, that leads Obi-Wan on another adventure.
Leads him on a merry chase.
That dart is from a planet called, was it Carmona? Kariba?
Kamino.
Bahama.
No, do not sing Kokomo. My least favorite song in the history of the world. I'll throw you out the window. So he says, you take Amidala to Naboo.
Do whatever you want with her. Go crazy.
Go protect her there.
Go be creepy with her.
I'm gonna go over to Carmina Burana, and I'm gonna see what's up with this dart. And he goes there.
Goes to the local library first.
And so he goes to the
you want can be found in your local library.
He goes to the Jedi Archives.
Except for the location of Kamino, which has been removed from the library.
He goes to the Jedi Archives and looks for the location of Kamino, and it's not there.
You can find them all over the place.
And the archivist says, if it's not in our archives, it doesn't exist. And she is basically like Mrs. Danvers from Rebecca. Like everyone in this movie exudes evil in a way that I don't think they're meant to, but like the Senator Palpatine is like, oh, I'm very worried about the Galactic Senate. Something might happen to it. Like, he basically is, everything about him says evil. And they're like, that Palpatine's a good guy. You know what? I like him. Let's trust him.
You're giving him a gayer voice than
well, because a lot, everyone is also kind of gay in Star Wars movies. That's... Obi-Wan, C-3PO.
You know, that was the thing. Like,
C-3PO is not kind of gay.
We were saying,
this was something that I had not thought about in all my years of Star Wars viewing, but Elliot brought it to my mind. It's just that Ben Kenobi's pretty gay.
He's like, very gay. Bachelor.
He reads very gay.
Like I said, we're watching it. He is the Oscar Wilde to C-3PO's Charles Nelson Reilly.
He is an elderly man who never married.
I think it fell into place for me when I realized Star Wars, the first one, is a movie about an old man who takes a younger man to a bar. Like, when it comes down to it. And I have to imagine that Obi-Wan, like, is just going to that bar and picking up alien dudes, you know, for one night stands.
I feel like he's, like, kind of like a Stephen Fry kind of gay, where he's, like, he's, you know, he doesn't really actually have...
Stephen Fry's gay?
What?
We didn't want you to find out this way. I don't know that he actually has
carnal relations with men, but, like spiritually.
Well, why not? He's a grown man. Come on.
No, I'm just saying...
Let him be a sexual
being.
He's
in pretty good shape.
I'm not denying him... I'm tired of this will and gracing of Obi-Wan. Okay. That's what I was about to say Sid and Nancy when I meant to say Will and Grace. That would have been a very different show.
They die in a hotel room.
Maybe
one of them murdered the other, maybe not.
We will never know. He finds this planet that was erased from the archives, which he realizes when Yoda asks a youngling, like a little kid, what it was, and only a kid is so devious as to think it could be erased. Meanwhile, Anakin and Amidala escape disguised as refugees who happen to be carrying with them R2-D2, the droid the Queen uses.
Yes. The most famous robot of all time.
This is the robot who's on the cover of Space Time magazine. Everyone's merchandised him. He is the house cat of Star Wars.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
Everybody loves him. He's the original party droid. was that the house droid?
Yeah, Bleep Blarp.
Original party droid.
Bleep Blarp!
TM.
So anyway, Amidala and Anakin go to Naboo, where he delivers his immortal, "You're not like sand, you're soft and not rough" speech. Mm-hmm. She falls for him.
A little bit about democracy.
Man. Instantly. They have a debate over whether...
That is a panty peeler, guys, by the way. If you ever want to woo a lady, tell her that she's not like sand.
Let me tell you, it is not a potato peeler. You tell a potato it's not like sand all day, it's not going to unpeel for you.
Yeah. No. Just sits there.
Just sits there, winking at you
looking
with its eyes.
Delicious.
What you want for that... It's $1.50 potato peeler. You pick them up at any grocery store.
You do not want the $1.50 panty peeler, though. It'll break first time you use it. So anyway, they have a debate over democracy. They clown around and Anakin surfs on the back of a giant animal. It's stupid.
It's amazing.
It's hella stupid, and that's how they fall in love. And this is such an old-fashioned, like, George Lucas only knows it from old movies idea of falling in love, where it's like, yeah, I guess you sit around in pretty fields and you talk and laugh. And you, like,
and
roll over each other.
One guy aggressively talks about how he's in love with the lady.
Until she gets worn down.
Yeah.
And then talking about how he believes in a political system based around tyranny. Right?
Based around fascism, yeah. So, at the same time,
charmer.
Obi-Wan follows the dart to Kamino, which is a stormy planet inhabited by clones who have buildings
and
technology.
Like sperm-headed monsters.
Yes, sperm-headed monsters who make the clones.
Yeah.
And it feels
pretty
like...
They're chill, though. They don't think anything.
They're laid
weird.
Back. When Obi-Wan walks in, they go, "Ah, Jedi, we've been expecting you. The Prime Minister would like to meet you." And he's like, "Why? Did you expect me? How do you know I'm a Jedi? What's
he's
going
real
on?"
Smooth.
And the Prime Minister is like, "Well, we made the clones you ordered." And he goes, "When did I order clones? didn't Jedi Master... What was his name?
Okay, this is something... Please, somebody explain to me what the fuck's going on. They keep talking about a Jedi Master, Sifo Dyas, which sounds like a very thinly disguised Darth Sidious. But apparently there was actually a dude named Sifo Dyas.
Because Obi-Wan says he died 10 years ago, or many years ago.
Yeah, like it's a fucking ghost story or some shit.
But it's so fun. But it's like Obi-Wan, who in the sequels, let's just call him that, the original movies,
sure,
is a very wise character, very smart. In the prequels, is the dumbest, clumsy gumshoe. He's basically like Space Clouseau, because they're like, Sifo Dyas sent you? And he goes, why would Sifo Dyas send me? Instead of lying like a detective would, playing along.
Course.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Did he communicate what he was? Did he tell you what he wanted me to find out about the clones? I'm testing you, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
There's a better way to write that, because I'm writing it off the top of my head. But like, the fact that Obi-Wan answers every question with a question about why Obi-Wan's there. He's like, we are making the clone army for Sifo Dyas. So you make clones here? Yeah. And the Prime
Remind
Minister
me.
And these people who have mastered cloning technology are so gullible and stupid they never see through his story, which he doesn't even give them. Like,
well, they've been alone.
Why is he going
to
give them
a story? They've
been
alone for so long, they're just happy to have someone
they
to
just
talk
want company.
To.
If they gave even a second of doubting what he's saying, he would just fucking jump kick him into next week.
Mm-hmm. That's true. He does a lot of jump kicks. But
he comes in and he sees these chandeliers
like,
full of babies.
For instance, if you walked into a bakery and you were like, yeah, you might have a cake for me. They'd be like, okay, what's your name? You can't just go like, well, what's the name on the cake? Because that's my name.
Like, let me look at the display case. That one's mine.
I'm Aladdin. Really, you're Disney's Aladdin? Yeah, that's what I meant. I'm Disney's Aladdin.
I'm sorry, that was made for a quinceañera. That's not...
So basically, Obi-Wan is the worst detective in the world. He finds this cloning world where they're making clones of Jango Fett, a bounty hunter, the same bounty hunter that Barack Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obamacare. All these clones that we don't want, am I right?
Why does my plan have to cover clones? I'm never going to have a clone.
It's the worst thing ever to happen to Kamino, to tell you.
They're going to shut them down. They're going to leave the business.
So Jango Fett's played by popular New Zealand actor Tamura Morrison from Once Were Warriors.
That's true. And everyone was excited. They're going to see the dad of Boba Fett, everyone's favorite bounty hunter who has 6 minutes in the original trilogy.
And this actor has a great history of being a dad, like in Once Were Warriors, where he plays a sexually abusive father.
Yeah, he's a bad dad. Let's just say it. So
classic bad soccer dad.
Obi-Wan decides to tell the Jedi he's found this thing in the middle of a storm. Like, he doesn't wait to get off planet to make his announcement. Like the terrible spy he is, he just announces it out loud in front of everybody. Jango Fett attacks him. There's a not terrible fight scene.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
One of the better action scenes between Jango Fett and Obi-Wan, where Obi-Wan does a bunch of flying jump kicks.
Yeah, and meanwhile, young Boba Fett is shooting him from the spaceship.
And all these explosions are going off.
He has to learn his skills somewhere.
Boba Fett will fire the spaceship guns, which are huge, or like a rocket.
Yeah, designed to blow up another spaceship.
And it'll explode pulverize less than a centimeter away from Obi-Wan, and he just kind of like rolls over and goes, He is basically invincible, Obi-Wan. And is that part of his character, that he's impenetrable?
He hates flying? Check. Invincible. Yeah,
he's immune to laser beams and bombs.
A rad beard.
He's got a rad beard. Yeah,
I think one of the Kamino ones called a rad beard.
Your beard is quite rad, Jedi Knight. What is rad? I have a beard. He just can't keep his story straight. Anyway, he follows Boba Fett. Boba Fett leaves. He follows Boba.
Jango
Fett.
Like,
well, Boba's in. He follows Jango and Boba, son and dad. He follows Banjo Fett and his dad.
Banjo, Harpo, and Chico
and his dad, Mango Fett. So he follows them to another planet. There's bombs going off.
Geonosis.
It's called Geonosis. Meanwhile, Anakin has had a bad dream about his mother.
About a bad dad?
No, about his mom.
About a bad mom.
His mom, Shmi Skywalker. Which, because it's like, it's, it feels, because all the names were made up by George Lucas in a 1 2-minute period. Shmi, Sebulba, Watto, whatever. Yeah. Is a bad guy. He's insidious. Darth Sidious. Great.
And this is a character, his mom.
The bad guy, Christopher Lee's character, Count Dooku. Doesn't that sound like poop? Whatever, we gotta get this film finished. Anyway, it sounds like Dracula, right? Not really, it sounds more like poop. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Get the movie rolling.
But we are hardly the first to point this out, but this mom character is someone that he is not worried about in years. Like, he has been freed from his slavery. he has been training as a Jedi, and then he's basically grown up, right? Forgotten about this. Like, he, I guess he's been spending all of his time dreaming about Padme, and so he doesn't have any time to seek out his mom, who has not moved anywhere. She's still on Tatooine.
She's still on Tatooine. He has a bad dream about her, and he goes, "We got to find her." And Amidala's like, "Okay." They go to Tatooine. They go to his old owner, Watto, the anti-Semitic stereotype.
Shouldn't they have just done this shit right after the first movie?
Yeah, they should have. When he became a rich Jedi, he should have gone and bought his mom's freedom.
He's like
freedom.
The richest little kid in the universe.
Yeah, he's Richie Rich.
Space Richie.
With a rat tail.
He's Richie Rich with full of space bucks.
Sure.
He's rich in midichlorians.
He's rat-taily rich.
Don't say that shit. That shit doesn't exist.
It's amazing
movie.
How midichlorians just kind of disappeared from the series. But anyway, so it's outside of our purview. That's episode one. And I do mean perv view when Dan McCoy is here. Anyway, so.
Classic Kalen cut-ups.
he goes to Watto and says, "What? Where's my mom?" And Watto, I think I called him Quado just then. Watto is one of the first.
Oh, boy. If
only. Is the first of like.
Hey, Andy's done a revolution. Giving those people some air.
So Watto is one of many characters who, when they see Anakin, goes, "Annie, is that you?" And I wish there was any moment where Anakin was like, "Please don't call me Annie. I'm a grown man."
Yeah.
But instead, he just accepts it.
Annie is a tiny orphan without pupils.
Yeah, blind, sad, really.
Yeah.
So Anakin finds out his mom got sold to a vaporizer farmer.
Annie loves Sandy, by the way. Loves Sandy. The other Annie does not love
true,
Sandy.
That's true, because Sandy to her is a dog and not a rough, tiny mineral.
Yeah.
A granule. Actually, Sandy is very rough. Get
right.
It? Like a dog?
Okay.
Anyway, nested,
no, I'm sorry,
nested puns. Anyway, I could go on forever. So the thing, they go to the vaporator farm where they find Uncle Beru and his girlfriend. The Uncle Owen and his girlfriend, Beru.
Played by Joel Edgerton.
And for a second.
Yeah.
And he finds out, oh no, Shmi was kidnapped by a bunch of Tusken Raiders. And then the guy refers to them as Tuskens. And I wanted to be like, stop the movie. George, you know there are real people called Tuskens, right? They're from Tuscany. Like, that's a real thing. Yeah. Like, you can't just say that.
And he just lifted their accent completely for the...
So I have to imagine...
They have to deal with that Tuscan sun.
I have to imagine
that
Diane Lane is finding love among these sand raiders.
Yep. Ducking their gaffy sticks.
Scaring them off with the occasional crate dragon call.
Because it's a terrifying creature.
Diane Lane, we ride single file to hide our numbers. You're right, I am in love. So anyway, Anakin goes to... In a moment that is... So there's a moment in the first Star Wars, we've all seen it, where Luke is looking at the sun setting, and they play the double sun is setting. John Williams' music swells, and it's this moment of...
In all of our hearts, and probably pants. There's a stirring.
It's a very powerful moment. This young boy who has dreams of a more exciting life, he sees it disappearing before his eyes. He has... fantasies about where his life could take him, and he knows it'll never happen. It's just out of his grasp.
The flattest, most boring place.
It's like he says, "It's the far. If there's a bright center of the universe, this is the farthest place from it." And at that moment, you feel like he feels it. This is something we can all sympathize with, especially Dan growing up in a tiny town.
Yep.
Growing
up, I was as good as a farm boy
in the backwoods of nowhere.
Yeah,
thinking, am I ever going to make it to the big city? Never, probably never.
Yeah,
well,
I'm going to die here.
I guess
among
I'll
the
go
soybeans.
Take the control bolts off of that new droid we bought from them.
I can't even go down
those,
to Tashi Station to pick up some new power
from those
converters.
Midget droids.
You can have fun with your friends later, Dan.
I'm
but,
sorry.
But instead, they use that music here, that wistful kind of like I want a better life music. Over Anakin saying, "I've got to go get revenge. Like, I'm going to go save her.
I'm going to kill the shit out of some
and he goes,
Tusken
and
Raiders."
He finds his mom just too late. Oh no, she dies in his arms.
She's all like tied up on a weird, framework. What's going on here?
My only guess, because they never explain it.
You're going to go forgot the her safe creepy word. Way, right?
My only guess. I'm not. There's nothing.
He went the creepy way.
What did you say?
I said she forgot about her safe word.
Wow.
Yeah, her safe word was.
Because it's a Tusken Raider.
By the way, never use that as a safe word.
No. Her safe word was, ouch. They kept stopping, and she'd be like, no, keep going. Ouch. Wait, do you want me to stop? No, that means it's working. Oh, God. You know what? Just tie me to that frame over there. Here's my guess, because it's never explained what they want her for or anything. That much like many Native American tribes in the United States, they would... raid each other's tribes and kidnap members of other tribes and then put them through gauntlets or physical tests as a way of initiating physical them challenges. Into their tribes. Well, I mean, physical sure. challenges is what they
dropping
are.
Gag all over their face. Yeah.
Usually didn't involve digging in a giant nose for a flag. But, you know, it was like that. You know, either that or they hang you from hooks from the top of the smoke lodge. But so my guess is the sand people under those wrappings are all different species who have been kidnapped and turned into members of the tribe through this induction ceremony, you know. But who knows? Of all the many...
They act like men, but they're really beasts.
Of all the many cultures in the Star Wars universe, the Tusken Raiders are never really fleshed out.
Yeah.
And they're the ones we see on screen.
And yet every other alien is represented in the Galactic Senate. Your Greedos, your Riggies, Three Eyes.
I was reading about those guys for like 5 minutes before yeah. this podcast.
Your butt-faced Pondababas, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. Anyway... So,
your
Anakin,
Dr. Zevazon.
Dr. Zevazon, your Wooksy. So,
that's terrible.
Yes, it is. So, and Greedo is a Rodian, I know, by the way. She dies in his arms, and he gets mad, and kills all the sand people.
Mm-hmm.
And he later
Seven
says,
one down the trail bad. To the dark side.
And he later sends to Anakin, I killed them all, and not just the men, the women and the children too. Mm-hmm. And she says, she seems to take that news okay. He's massacred those people.
Yeah, she's into it.
She's like, anger is a part of life, Anakin. And it's like, yeah. Stop right there. It's not anger. He murdered a whole... he committed genocide, you know.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, we only see him kill, like, three dudes,
but
right?
So he might have been making up the story to impress her?
Yeah, of course.
He
ran away.
killed 800?
I killed 3,000 sand people. They just kept coming, and I was like, no way.
And there was one that was, like, super strong, and he had, like, 7 lightsabers. And I'm like, no way, buddy.
And I just chopped them all down.
Anakin, I just looked at the corpse of your mom. It looks like she had a lightsaber burn on her. Like, no... no, the sand people did that.
So anyway, Anakin goes to... Obi-Wan goes to Geonosis, where they're making a droid army. He finds Count Dooku is with a bunch of other guys who are leaving
the
Republic.
The best scene of the movie,
which is, yes, a bunch of characters talking around a table, but at least they're crazy characters.
Yeah, a couple of them are like Venture Brothers villains. And
yeah, there's a guy, there's like an old squid man.
Yeah, that guy, instead of a beard, he's got tentacles. It's great.
It's crazy. He's like Davy Jones from the Pirates of the Caribbean
movies.
Yeah,
but he doesn't play a fucking piano with it.
We don't know that.
Okay,
maybe he does in his spare time.
Yeah, that's the kind of music they listen to.
We're going
to.
Really long, so let's just say Obi-Wan makes us an emergency.
Nobody's ever seen this one.
An emergency transmission. Anakin and Padma pick it up. They go and try to save him. There's a totally unnecessary action scene in a factory assembly line.
Where we learn that all of a sudden R2-D2 has rockets for some reason.
He can fly with his rocket propulsion. We never see this again.
Which, as I said, as we were watching it, that's like in Superman 2, when all of a sudden Superman pulls his S off and throws it at one of the villains. It's like, oh, okay, this is, I guess, a power you have? We didn't see it before.
And I'll never do that again.
Because it's stupid.
Wait, R2-D2 doesn't
fly around. I look
kind of
dumb when I do it.
All the time.
No, he does not. And so, which really would have helped in some of the other scenes in the later movies.
Yeah.
But, earlier movies, that is.
I don't get it.
Anyway, it's time travel. So, they all get captured. They get sentenced to, as Stuart calls it, death by monster, by three monsters. And this is probably the best scene in the whole movie.
Other than the one part where they all sit around a table and talk for a couple minutes.
Yes, where they're fighting. They're in an arena with a giant cat tiger monster, mm-hmm. some kind of like praying mantis crab monster,
yeah,
and a rhinoceros monster.
Like a minotaur rhinoceros.
And they're fighting each other, and the good guys escape.
Some good physical comedy.
A bunch of Jedi show up.
There's a lot of fighting for some reason.
A lot of Jedi show up.
There's an exposed tummy on Natalie Portman.
And Natalie Portman's,
yeah.
her belly
She's been
gets.
Doing a lot of crunching.
The shirt
sure,
part
man.
Of her belly
Is that
gets
part
ripped
of her
apart.
Senator, like,
sure.
thing?
Yeah.
Well, she governs.
How you get elected?
She governs through crunches and core ball exercises.
She governs through core strength.
On her planet, they choose their leaders through their core strength.
Yeah. Naboo, yeah.
Yeah, Naboo. Anyway, so there's a big fight. Jedis arrive, then robot soldiers arrive, then clone soldiers arrive. It's that clone army that the cloners were making. Mm-hmm. And Yoda becomes a general all of a sudden.
They've graduated from clone high, and now they're going to be fighting.
He says the immortal line, around the survivors, a perimeter create, which is so dumb. Why is that one backwards?
Yeah, I mean, as we were saying... Yoda in like Empire, like every once in a while he would do the fucking reverse syntax thing.
Now
in
it's every sentence.
Every sentence.
The bathroom I must use.
And I get it. The clone troopers will take orders from anybody who talks to them.
Yeah.
But do you think they have the mental capacity to like translate all of Yoda's bullshit?
No way. Not ever. And he talks backwards. The worst when he's ordering in restaurants. The fish special I'll have. Cheese hold. Wait, so you want the cheese or not?
Dressing on the side I will take.
I don't understand what you just told me. And then the salad arrives and he's like, dressing on the salad there is. On the side I asked for. Look, I don't understand what the fuck you're saying, Yoda. You gotta talk straight. My name, you know. Look, I just saw your credit card.
That was the day Elliot quit his job at the Olive Garden. Space Olive Garden.
He called it Garden the Olive of. Like, doesn't even
make
sense.
Where family you are here.
Where family you are. Okay, Yoda, cut. The line is, hear your family. Family you are here. Cut. Okay, Yoda, let's get this straight. Look. It's the Olive Garden. We know it's not art. Just deliver the line as said. My motivation, what is? Oh, God, Yoda, it's commercial.
Breadsticks unlimited, they are.
Salad bowl, bottomless it is.
Damn it, Yoda.
Damn it, Yoda.
Okay, somebody, we need more makeup on these younglings.
My agent I must call. Oh, this again. Temperamental you are. Hey, heard that I did.
He's a diva, guys. Anyway, so
we don't have the time, but I want to do Yoda as Orson Welles doing that pee commercial.
No living actor I would direct this way in Shakespeare, I would.
Start a sentence emphasizing if I cannot. Find some way to do it. You can go down on
the
you.
Fun
I will.
Of it, that's where it is. I can't even do it backwards.
Can't even do it. It's too much. Anyway, there's a big battle. The clones turn the tide of battle. Count Dooku escapes. Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Padme are chasing after him. There's a blast, and Amidala falls out onto a desert that looks like it's made out of Cheeto dust for how bright orange it is. Anakin wants to stop, but Obi-Wan says, "No, we've got to keep going." If it was Amidala, what would she do? And he goes, she'd do her duty. And they go, and when they're chasing a guy named Count Dooku, you can't say the word duty. But they go, they find Count Dooku, who is escaping with the plans for the Death Star. And they attack him. There's a big fight. He chops off Anakin's arms, and he gives Obi-Wan what looks like to be two very cosmetic burns, kind of just flesh singes.
Then, because Anakin starts going fucking buck wild with two lightsabers, but then you gotta cut an arm off.
But then here's Stewart's favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
A little guy named Yoda stumbles in on his cane.
Because at that moment I was wondering, who's the man, Elliot?
It turns out, according to a hastily thrown together commercial a week after the movie opened, Yoda man.
Because if I haven't seen Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, I'm like, I'm thinking about going to a movie tonight. TV, tell me what I should see.
Is there something where like a little green gremlin flips around with a laser sword fighting an old man?
Like a fucking manic frog with a sword?
There's something where an old man with a laser sword fights a frog imp who also has a laser sword and is wearing a monk's robe? This is a dumb movie. Let's just say that right now. Every movie can sound dumb if you break it down that way. I referred to Star Wars earlier, like you remember, as a movie about an old man who takes a young guy to a bar. It happens, but this is...
What was your other, like, with the one with bears?
Return of the Jedi is about a race of space bears. But and also that Star Wars is about a movie about a boy who gives a robot a bath. Yes. It's all true.
That's
happens in the movie.
One.
Oh, thanks.
That's your explanation to the cops when they come to take you away. You're like, no, they do it in the movie.
Come on.
There's a space mummy.
He's not in it till the second movie. Dengar the space mummy. So anyway.
Fifth movie.
Sorry. Oh, damn it. Chronology. So there's a fight between Yoda and Count Dooku. Count Dooku distracts Yoda by making a big machine fly in the air, and Yoda's going to stop it. Count Dooku escapes and delivers the Death Star plans to Darth Sidious, who we know it's Palpatine. I don't know why they're pretending, we don't know. He's got a hood over his face like we're going to be surprised that the guy who has the same last name as the Emperor is going to turn out to be the bad guy.
Because he's making it for, you know, generations down the road who are going to watch the Star Wars
in
movies
order.
In chronological order and not understand anything.
And their minds are going to be fucking blown.
They don't explain
and also,
Jedi's until
the Emperor was
movie.
And the Senator was given emergency powers or some nonsense. Anyway, Everyone leaves. Anakin gets a terrible-looking robot arm and marries Amidala secretly, and Yoda says the Clone Wars have begun.
Yeah, the end. Yeah, so we've gone for a really long time, so I think we're just going to skip ahead.
Let's say what's bad about this movie.
Yeah.
The writing, the acting, the directing, the special effects, and the story.
No, let's final
judge. Some of the music is okay.
Let's final judge this thing.
Now, okay. We might have missed some of the stupid things about this movie. Feel free to write in.
I'm sure that
Email Sedan complaining.
In the decades since this movie was released, it has been cataloged, all the stupid I guess shit.
After winning Best Picture, probably. Did, yeah.
It won the Academy Award for Best Picture ever,
mm-hmm.
beating every movie ever made.
Yeah. It won.
And It's widely considered the worst of the three, right?
I think it's
the worst of the three.
I think it's the worst of the six. I mean, let's go that, I mean, obviously. But
sure.
I think the worst of the prequels. And I feel like by going through the plot, we've only scratched the surface of how overly, needlessly complicated the plot is and how poorly executed everything is. How there's a lot of scenes that seem to be put in just so that you can make a video game based on that scene.
But final judgments wise.
Okay, final judgments
is
wise.
Is this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of like? Elliot, continue with your deconstruction.
It's a movie that has a couple action scenes in it that I enjoy a little bit. But overall, it's a bad, bad movie. It could be a good, bad movie if it was shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was... It takes itself so seriously, and so that means that the comedy parts are really jarring. And so the movie never, for me, has that, it never is laughably bad. It's just why is this going on? Except for the space diner.
Yeah.
Maybe it's good bad. I don't know.
Well, here's
it's
the
got
thing.
A space diner in
what
it.
I'm going to say about this movie is I hate it and I kind of like it.
Interesting.
There's stuff in it that makes me so mad. Like all of the romance shit in this movie is so bad. It makes me I don't understand how George Lucas has interpersonal relationships based on these.
Since he has this middle school idea that, if you are angry enough at a person you have a crush on, they will come around to loving
and
you.
He's got the best hair CGI I can buy.
Hayden Christensen seems like such a creep. There's so much stupid stuff in this film. But at the same time, I can't bring myself to hate it because it does have some of that residual Star Wars shine on it.
I think you're getting it mixed up in your mind with your Star Wars feelings.
No, I totally am. No, I'm 100% aware of what's happening. But the thing is, while I hate the movie, I can't bring myself to be like, this is, I know it's bad, but I can't. Get rid of it. I can't quit it.
Yeah, you wish you knew how to quit this movie.
Mm-hmm. It's totally a bad boyfriend. I know it's terrible for me, and if I had never met this movie, if this movie had never existed, my life would be better right now.
Yeah.
I would probably be super successful.
Stuart has the best analogy here.
And yet the sex is amazing. Yeah.
It's incredible.
But it's so crazy.
As you guys know, I own this. This isn't the product of a fucking Columbia House splurge purchase where I'm like, oh, Columbia House, take it up with my mom. where you'd fucking buy a million CDs.
For a penny, and it turns out it actually cost $1,000.
Pay for them, apparently.
No, of course not. You make up seven different accounts with different names. So, come on, Dan.
There's a reason Columbia House went out of business, and it's Stuart.
Yeah, you just got to shack up with a Fagin-esque character that'll teach you how to rip off Columbia House. So, yeah, I like this movie. I shouldn't. There's no real I can't defend it.
I honestly, there's part of me that wishes I could feel that way about it, but I think my younger obsession with Star Wars has just faded to the point where I like the Star Wars movies that I like, and I don't like the Star Wars movies that I don't like, and they don't have that connection for me that they once had.
I can't completely separate it anymore.
I guess you guys feel about it the same way I feel about Spider-Man comics, where I'll continue reading them even when they're terrible. Because when it's good, because I love the character so much.
As long as the webhead is what's bitten, slinging
them. As long as that friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is cracking yucks and making bucks.
You phoned that one in.
Well, I was trying to think of somebody.
J. Jonah, give me some bucks.
Oh, I'll allow it. Because he's a judge.
Yeah.
That's what the J stands for.
I think you know what it might be is that the Star Wars universe filled a place for me when I was younger about a universe I could learn every detail of and really inhabit in my imagination and just find out every intricacy that I could. And to a certain extent, real history has taken that place in my heart where it's like, oh, I can learn all about what America was like in the 1860s or ancient Rome or medieval times. Like, there's a real universe that I can that I've translated that feeling to.
Yeah, you know? you've grown up a little bit, and I have not.
I don't even know if it's grown up, but I found something else that fills the space that Star Wars once filled. So when I see detritus like this that I should have a sentimental attachment to, I'm just like, forget it.
So
no, you don't.
Let's quickly go through a few letters. I know that we're running long, but let's do a few letters.
It's almost as if we don't have a time for a letter song, Dan.
It is as if that is the case.
But that's not the case. Hey, everybody. Beep, boop, beep, you mailed us some letters.
Star Wars Postal Service producing this?
Where who could have sent us these letters? Could we get a letter from Shredder? Probably not. He's a fictional ninja, but a real life ninja should write in and give us the truth about his tooth. Is there a cyanide pill in there in case he gets caught? Letters.
It's a free range song.
I got thrown off by the beep boops.
It's right. The Star Wars one where we got a droid back.
The Flaphouse House droid was really throwing me off.
Yeah, Max Rebo showed up.
You know what? Okay, you know what would have made this a good bad movie? If Max Rebo was in it. If there was a scene where Max Rebo and Sice Noodles were like a struggling music group and you just saw them lugging their amps around.
Max Rebo's got like sideburns and Sice Noodles. I don't know.
Because the best part of watching this was watching the aliens and being that are from the older movies and being like, oh, my son Greedo is going to Tatooine. Oh, my son Ponda Beba is also going to Tatooine.
Hanging out with med student Evazon.
Med student going out with resident Evazon.
Look out for Rhea is at Jabba's palace.
At teen gangster Jabba the Hutt. Like, I would have wanted more references to every character in the series.
All right, so this first letter is from Laura, last name withheld. She writes...
Laura Linney?
I found your podcast earlier this year.
She's not dead.
Through Entertainment Weekly's Must List and have been hooked ever since. Elliot has long since become my favorite flopper.
Thank you, Lauren. Excellent choice. Letter.
With his rapid-fire sass and self-professed reedy tone... Although I can't
help a nice way to put it.
I can't help but feel for poor Dan, who just wants to read fan mail on his iPad.
Still should rip up this letter.
I confess to looking forward to Elliot's songs about the Flophouse mailbag the most.
Thank you.
Sorry, Dan. I realize I've only encouraged him to burst into song yet again, didn't I?
Thank you, Laura, for the props.
We don't.
Thank you, Laura, for the thing you said about the songs that you love that I'm singing of.
Mm-hmm.
Song for Laura.
And who can resist Stuart's...
Oh, put this letter back together.
Constant recommendations of Castle Freak and his devilish charm.
Me?
He did sell his soul to the devil for charm.
But at last, dear floppers, I finally come to my question for you guys. And it so happens to be this. If you ran into these Flophouse favorites, Gerard Butler, Katherine Heigl, and Nicolas Cage, what would you say to them? I can only hope you would offer them sage career advice as only you can. From Laura Lesk.
You mean sage career advice?
Yeah. What would you say if you met Gremlin Balor?
Who, me?
Yeah,
I'd be like.
Didn't you guys see him on the show?
No, we did not hang around the green room.
Oh, okay.
The
Gremlin Battler.
If I ran into Gerard Butler, I'd say like, "Hey, I enjoyed 300."
Yeah,
and I'd end it there.
Hey, keep Jason Mavericks.
Mm-hmm. Hey, keep White Housing down. Or had it was Olympus Has Fallen.
You would get really mad if you fucked that
That's
up.
That's true.
If I ran into Katherine Heigl, I'd be like, I kind of liked One for the Money. Why don't you do more stuff like that where you're not angry?
I would say, what was it like working with Steven Soderbergh on the movie King of the Hill?
Mm-hmm.
What would you say, Stuart?
What was it like
to Catherine Heigl? I'd say, hey, stop making out with me, babe. I got a wife.
You wouldn't go, D'Artagnan.
You'd be like, what was it like making my father the hero?
She says it way more like scolding. Yeah. D'Artagnan.
If I met Nicolas Cage, again, I'd pick a movie I like of his. I'd say
keep up the good work, Nicolas
Cage. Raising Arizona to Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. You've done some fantastic work that meant a lot to me.
You're an A-plus man.
I'd say keep me. Every time someone asks you to do a movie, say yes so we can flop it.
I would say, hey, Nicolas Cage, there, my car is located over there. Let's go hang out for a while.
Keep on keeping on.
Oh, I thought you meant because he's like a valet attendant. yeah, Nicolas Cage, my car's over there. If you could bring it back for me.
Keep on trucking. So this letter.
I wouldn't trust him with my car. He'd go all kinds of crazy with
it.
Oh,
he'd crash
it
gone
in 60 seconds.
He'd crash it into a castle or something.
Sell it for a castle. this was
pretty tiny castle. Cost the same as a used car.
Or maybe he's just complimenting my car.
He's taken your car apart and turned it into a castle made out of car parts.
This is titled In Defense of Dan McCoy. It's from Brian, last name withheld. It says, Dan is not given the respect he deserves because he has what I call the shimp quality.
Chimp quality? Yeah, he is like a chimp.
The shimp quality. Elliot, obviously, is curly. He's immediately the one you notice first and is the superstar of the group.
And who dies the youngest.
So you appreciate him first. Stuart is Larry. He's not noticed right away, but once he is, you realize what an integral part and great part he is to the group. He adds to the pot without the flashiness of Elliot Curly, but helps elevate the rest.
I think it's the other way around. I think I'm Mo and he's Curly.
Dan is the last to be appreciated. The main reason is that he's the host, and being so, he has to harness the personalities of his co-hosts. He understands what makes a host great is stepping back and allowing others to shine while holding down the foundation. It is, unfortunately, the Zeppo role.
Oof. I think you're overestimating Zeppo's importance to the Marx Brothers.
Yeah. As the straight man is usually not allowed to engage in the zany antics of the others, Dan falls into the only sane man comedy trope, a straight man who has craziness and wild characters all around him. Examples? Michael Bluth, Frasier, Dr. Watson, Jim Halpert, Tim Canterbury, Jerry Seinfeld, Agent Coulson. So why do I say...
Here's one. Dan, you know what? You'll feel praised by
Bilbo Baggins, Arthur Dent.
You know, he's the real
I'll
one.
I'll take Arthur Dent.
No, you know who I'd compare you to? Kermit T. Frog.
Thank you. That's probably the best.
Yeah. It's almost the best one. I'm Han Solo, Elliot's Chewbacca, and you get to be Luke Skywalker.
I would prefer to be Kermit the Frog.
It's almost like I'm Donatello, you're Raphael Michelangelo, and you're Leonardo.
Can we go back to Kermit?
It's almost like you're Wolverine, I'm the Beast, and you're Cyclops.
So why do
no,
I say...
No, you're the Kermit of the group.
Dan has the shimp quality. Shimp is not the straight man. That role pretty much goes to Larry. I once read, in Jewish culture, a boy becomes a man when he turns 13. In Stooge culture, it happens when he learns to love shimp. Shimp is not appreciated right away, almost totally because he's held up against the impossible shadow of Curly. However, once you actually stop comparing Shimp and start looking at him as his own person, you can begin to appreciate and then love Shimp. So the love of Dan McCoy is the more of a slow burn, but because of that, it shines the brightest. Well, wow. I appreciate that backhandedest of backhanded compliments.
I mean, this being a Shimp is better than being the Zeppo.
No, it is better than being the Zeppo. I like being the shimp because that reminds me of Evil Dead and how they called all the random zombies as shimps.
And the stand-ins.
Yeah. So, thank you.
Whatever gets you through the days, you know? Yep. When you're staring into the darkness.
Yeah.
But if we were Ghostbusters, Stuart would be Peter Venkman.
Yeah.
I guess I'd be Egon. And then what would you be? Ernie Hudson?
You'd be Slimer?
I can't.
What's Rick Moranis' character again?
I can't even be Ray. Lewis? You will not even let me be Ray. I'll just be...
Okay, you can be Ray. You would be Ray. That's true.
Yeah, practice your cross-eyed blowjobs. Mm-hmm. That's the receiving of blowjobs, guys.
Yeah,
from a ghost.
I'm not misinterpreting the movie.
You gotta put on a Napoleon costume first. Lastly,
not the dessert, the historical figure.
Lastly, dear the Flophouse, this is from Auntie, last name withheld, in sunny Finland. Dear the Flophouse, what are wormy boners? Do I have one?
Well, your doctor will be able to help you with that. If you think you have a wormy boner, you should probably see a physician. But Stuart, what would you say?
Well, first off, it looks like a curlicue pigtail.
I always assumed that Crypt Keeper has a wormy boner.
Yeah, because he's a rotting corpse.
In all your mental images, because there's no actual images.
The Crypt Keeper is like in his crypt, searching the World Wide Web.
Picking a louse. Yeah.
I needed a prescription for Viagra because I had erectile decomposition.
Yeah.
He's got a...
It was Wormy Boners.
It was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Raceway Park. That's for anyone who listening who used to who grew up in the tri-state
he's
region.
He's having sex with MILFs. That's Mummy I Like to Fuck.
That's basically like in The Frighteners, right?
Yeah.
When John Astin as the cowboy ghost has sex with a mummy.
Yep. He likes it when they just lie there.
Oh.
Look, that's not my joke. That's
it's in the movie, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you can't be blamed for it.
Yeah. I can be blamed for remembering it, certainly. So thank you for your letters, as always.
Didn't really answer the question, but okay.
Moving on.
I think we both described it pretty well. Okay. It's how the Crypt Keeper looks like a pig's curlicue tail.
All right. I already erased that from my memory, yeah.
Now, lastly.
Firstly.
Is the part of the podcast where we recommend a movie that you should watch instead of Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones.
Mm-hmm.
Elliot, what do you have to say?
I'm going to recommend a movie I enjoyed. Enjoyed might be the wrong word. It was a good movie, but it's not a comedy or nothing. It's a recent film called War Witch. It came out last year.
That sounds awesome.
And it's not what you think it is. It's a French language movie mostly set in Africa, where it's in sub-Saharan Africa, about a 12-year-old girl who is kidnapped by soldiers and forced to become a child soldier. First, they force her to kill her parents in front of them, and then they induct her. And she seems to be able to see the spirits of the deceased who warn her of danger. And so she gains reputation among the rebels that she's been forced to serve with as a war witch.
Is this the movie that you keep trying to get Hallie to watch?
I think Hallie would like it. Not keep. I recommended it to her once.
I feel like I've been in the room at least three times when this has happened.
I don't think so. But anyway,
sounds
but she,
like right up Hallie's alley. I don't know what you're talking about.
The way I'm describing it sounds more supernatural than it is. It's more about this girl being forced into a very hellish
situation.
Sounds
like the Ghost Whisperer.
Mm-hmm. It's not the Ghost Whisperer. It is the farthest thing from the
Ghost Whisperer.
It's the farthest thing from the Ghost Whisperer. Jennifer Love Hewitt's Ghost Cleavage Show.
That's the ghost with the most whispers, right?
But it's more about her trying to escape these men with the help of a slightly older boy named Magician, who they believe has magic powers, and trying to get away from these soldiers and then trying to live with the things that she's been forced to do. And it was just a really good movie. It was harsh at times, but it was touching at other times. And I thought they did a really great job of telling the story without being overly sensational or overly maudlin about kind of the plight of child soldiers after they stop fighting. Anyway, so War Witch I thought was very good.
I would like to recommend a movie. I saw a advanced screening of the Coen Brothers' new movie, Inside Llewyn Davis. I have been forbidden by Elliot from saying too much because he doesn't want any spoilers.
I can leave the room.
No, it's fine. I will say about this movie.
Starting at the end.
Elliot was not necessarily, like, he loves the Coen Brothers, like I love the Coen Brothers.
I think they're great. I think they're possibly the best living filmmakers in America, certainly.
But he was not particularly excited about this film just because the subject matter, he didn't find that interesting.
Because the folk world of the 60s, I can
Yeah, and
shit.
I'm not, I'm not particularly interested in the folk scene of early 1960s Greenwich Village, New York. That said, I love this movie start to finish. It might be my favorite movie that I've seen released this year. It does have a wonderful soundtrack, even though I'm not a folky by any means. T-Bone Burnett, of course, is known for putting together great soundtracks.
And a great steak.
but
New
it's
York
a,
Strip?
I will say it's a movie that...
Prime rib.
It is a movie that it is not dependent on plot at all. It is a very mood-driven film, and it is a sort of a examination of a guy who is stubbornly a failure, and not because the world is against him often, but because he is just a failure by nature. Like he makes his own failure in spite of being a wonderful folk musician, and it has this bittersweet, wintry mood about it. And it's a character study. It's a study in mood. It's not a heavily plotted film, but it's one I think that will stick with you if you see it. So that's my recommendation.
I'm going to recommend seeing the next movie in the pod crawl.
Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
And I'm also going to recommend
Revenge of the Snuff.
which you should watch so you can get prepped. You can bone up on your Star Wars bullshit for the next one of these. And I'm also going to recommend a movie I don't think I've ever actually recommended, but I may have mentioned also
it's
featuring...
It's called Head of the Family.
Star Wars star Ewan McGregor. Mm-hmm. It's called Night Watch.
It's called A Life Less Ordinary.
And it's a like a horror movie thriller starring...
It's an early Ewan McGregor.
Yeah. With
it's based on a Scandinavian film.
Yeah, I think you're right. It does not feature, what is it, vampires? What's in that Russian one?
It's not, it's not the one about the forces of good and evil.
It's about a med student who, by night, works as a night watchman at
a mortuary.
At a mortuary. And it, up until the recent Ty West film, what is that, House of the Devil? I haven't seen a movie that so perfectly captures that feeling of creepiness of walking around a big building by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, aside from Mirrors, when he goes to that abandoned department building in the middle of Manhattan.
Yeah, but that one wasn't creepy. And there isn't a CGI demon, spoiler alert, in this one. There's a young Josh Brolin in it who's very good. Nick Nolte is super creepy as usual. And it's great. I recommend it.
All right. So that brings us to the end of our part in the pod crawl. If you want to listen to the first part.
Laser sword, Han Solos.
If you want to listen to the first part, check out Read It and Weep. If you want to listen to the third part in a week or more, I'm not exactly sure when it comes out. It'll come out at the end of this month. Listen to Proudly Resents.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a trilogy that at least will be on par with the movies that we watch. but until next time.
We're the worst one, right?
Like in the original, we're the worst one.
We won the award.
Someone throw us in the Sarlacc as punishment. We're gonna be digested for 1,000 years. Yeah.
Along with, I'm assuming, a shitload of dewbacks.
That just wandered in.
Because it looks delicious, and then you think it's just a giant asshole in the sand, and then a fucking beak comes
delicious,
out.
Delicious, this enormous toothed sand rectum. real delicious.
The anal dentata. Legendary.
Whoa, chill out. There's a beak, come on.
Okay. And tentacles. There's a beak in the special edition.
All right.
In the original movies, it's just a rubbery throat.
All right, we'll keep arguing about Star Trek ephemera after the podcast
Star Trek?
Is over.
What the hell are you talking
Jesus
about?
Jesus Christ. abort.
You're gonna get us killed. We gotta get out of this neighborhood.
All right.
For
the podcast, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And if you're any worse, I'm not Ellie Kalen.
Good night, everyone.
Make it so.
Warp speed.
Sorry, I'm really gassy, I guess.
Typhon.
Oh, shit. We're recording.
Uh-oh.
Live mic.
Everyone on the internet knows that you fart.
That is terrible smelling. Apologize.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's because I think that's because of the cat more than anything else.
No.
No, I mean my coughing.
Oh.
Not because of your fart.
I think Dan's gonna cry.